Chapter 22. Next. Transgenre Taxis was one of several Bookworld taxi companies, and the only firm that could boast an accident rate that was vaguely acceptable. Taxis were a good way to get around the Bookworld if you weren't that good at jumping or had lots of luggage, but in comparison to the instantaneous book jump, they were like snails. They didn't so much jump as creep. Getting all the way across the Bookworld, from philosophy to poetry, for instance, could take as long as an hour. "You're kidding me," I said into my mobile footnoter phone 20 minutes later. I was outside the main entrance to Norland Park as the sun began its downward slope from midday heat into the rare beauty of an Austin literary afternoon. The warm, rural environment was rich with the sound of the plough horses' bridles jingling in the fields, the bees buzzing merrily in the hedgerows, and young ladies a-twitter with gossip regarding the genteel ensnarement of moneyed husbands. "Well," I added crossly, "just send it as soon as you can." I snapped the phone shut.
"Problems?" asked Thursday Five, who had been making a daisy chain while sitting cross-legged on the warm grass.
"Those twits at Transgenre Taxis," I replied. "More excuses. They claim there are long backups due to a traffic accident inside the Great Gatsby, and our cab will be at least an hour."
"Can't we just jump straight to wherever it is we're going?"
She stopped and thought for a moment.
"Where are we going?"
"The piano squad, but we're waiting for someone."
"Who?"
"We're waiting," I said, unsure of how to break the news, "for a cadet who is under reappraisal."
"Another cadet?"
repeated Thursday Five, who seemed vaguely miffed at first, but soon recovered.
"If only I'd known, I could have baked a welcome cake."
"I don't think she's a cake sort of person," I murmured, as a noise like the scrunching of cellophane heralded her arrival. She appeared looking somewhat out of breath, and we all three stared at one another for some moments in silence, until both cadets said, at precisely the same time, "What's she doing here?" "Listen," I said to them both, "I know this is an awkward situation, and a little weird too, if you want to know my opinion, and if either of you doesn't like it, you can just go straight back to your respective books." My latest apprentice glared at me, then at Thursday Five, then at me again, before saying with a forced smile,
"In that case, I should probably introduce myself and say what an incredible honor it is to be apprenticed to the great Thursday Next."
"Why don't you save your breath and your sarcasm?" I retorted. I liked a challenge, but this was probably one or two challenges too far. For this, of course, was the other Thursday Next, the one from the first four books in the series, the violent ones, full of death and gratuitous sex.
"Well, whoop-dee-doo," she said quietly, looking at us both. "If this is how the day starts, it can only get better."
Thursday Five and I stared at the newcomer with a curious kind of fascination. Unlike Thursday Five, who always dressed in fair trade cotton and woolens, this Thursday preferred aggressive black leather, leather trousers, jacket, and a greatcoat that swept to the floor. So much, in fact, that she squeaked when she walked. Her hair was the same length as ours, but was pulled back into a ponytail more sharply, and her eyes were hidden by small dark glasses. Attached to her belt were two automatic pistols, with the butts facing in, so she could cross-draw. Heaven knows why. Aside from this, and despite being featured in books that were set between 1985 and 1988, she looked exactly as I did, even to the flecks of grey hair that I still pretended I didn't care about. But she wasn't me. She was less like me, in fact, than the Talking to Flowers version, if such a thing was possible. I'd read the books, and although she attempted to do things for the right reason, her methods could be best described as dubious, and her motivations suspect. Thursday Five was mostly thought with very little action.
Thursday 1 through 4 was mostly action with very little thought. The series had sacrificed characterization for plot and humor for action and pace. All atmosphere had evaporated, and the books were a parade of violent set pieces interspersed with romantic interludes. And when I say romantic, I'm stretching the term. Most famous was her torrid affair with Edward Rochester and the stand-up catfight with Jane Eyre. I had thought it couldn't get any worse until Mrs. Fairfax turned out to be a ninja assassin and Bertha Rochester was abducted by aliens. And all that was just in the first book. It got more far-fetched after that. By book four, it felt as though the first draft had been torn apart by wolves and then stuck back together at random before publication. I took a deep breath, inwardly cursed Commander Bradshaw, and said, "Thursday, meet Thursday." "Hello," said Thursday 5 brightly, offering a hand in reconciliation. "So pleased to meet you, and happy birthday for yesterday." Thursday looked at Thursday's outstretched hand and raised an eyebrow. "I've had the misfortune to read the great Samuel Pepys fiasco," she said in an unfriendly tone. "If you took the Samuel Pepys out of the title, it would be a lot more honest. A bigger crock of shit I have yet to find. I kept on waiting for the shootouts to begin. And there weren't any. Just a load of hugging, vitamins, and people saying they love one another."
"There's nothing wrong with hugging," retorted Thursday 5 defensively. "Perhaps if you were to try..."
She put out her arms, but was met with the curt response, "Lay your muesli-smelling paws on me and I'll break your nose."
"Well," said Thursday 5 in an indignant huff, "I'm almost sorry I wished you a happy birthday. And I'm very glad I didn't bake you a cake."
"I'm devastated." "Listen," I said, before this descended into blows, "I'm not going to ask you to get along. I'm telling you to get along. Okay?" Thursday 1 through 4 gave a lackadaisical shrug. "Right," I began, addressing Thursday 1 through 4. "There are three simple rules if you want to train with me. Rule 1, you do exactly as I tell you. Rule 2, you speak when you're spoken to. Rule 3, I shall call you Thursday 1 through 4, or Thir 1 to 4, or Wednesday, or anything I want, really. You will call me Mom. If I summon you, you come running. Rule 4, you give me any crap and your history."
"I thought you said there were only three rules.
I make it up as I go along. Do you have any problem with that?"
"I suppose not."
"Good. Let's start at the beginning. How much classroom theory have you done?"
6 weeks. Took my finals last Tuesday and came in third."
"That's not bad."
"How many in the class?" asked Thursday 5, who was still smarting over the possibility that her hands smelled of muesli, let alone the threat of a broken nose.
Thursday 1 through 4 glared at her and mumbled,
"Three, and 2% above the minimum pass mark, before you ask. But I scored 99% on the range. Pistols, rifle, machine gun, grenade launcher, you name it."
This was the main reason I didn't like the Thursday Next series. Far, far too many guns, and a body count that would be the envy of the cinematic Rambo. Thursday 1 through 4 unholstered an aggressive-looking automatic and showed it to us both.
"Glock, 9mm, she said proudly. 16 in the clip and 1 up the spout. Severe stopping power. I carry 2 to make quite sure."
"Only 2? I murmured sarcastically.
"No, since you're asking."
She lifted up the back of her leather greatcoat to show me a large, shiny revolver stuffed down the back of her trousers.
"What do you carry?" she asked. "Beretta? Browning? Walter?"
"None," I said. "Charge into a room with a gun and someone ends up dead."
"Isn't that how it's supposed to work?"
"In your books, perhaps. If someone dies during an assignment, then the assignment was a failure. No exceptions."
"Diplomacy and using your head," put in Thursday Five bravely, "are better than waving a gun around."
"And what would you know about it, your supreme bogusness?"
"You don't have to insult me all the time," she replied, visibly upset. "And besides, I'm not sure bogusness is a word."
"Well, listen here, veggie burger," said the leather-clad Thursday in a sneering tone of voice. "I do have to insult you all the time, firstly because it's fun, and secondly because..."
"No, I don't need a second reason."
"Jeez," I said, shaking my head sadly as all patience left me. "You're still revolting, aren't you?"
"Revolting?" she retorted.
"Perhaps, but since I'm mostly you, I guess you're partly to blame, right?"
"Get this straight in your head," I said, moving closer. "The only thing you share with me is a name and a face. You can have a go at the great Samuel Pepys fiasco all you want, but at least it's not a constant orgy of comic book violence and abundant, meaningless sex."
"Oh, I'm sorry. Is that a criticism, or just wishful thinking on your part? Because I was having a look at the figures the other day, and I'm still selling strongly."
She turned to the Pepys Thursday.
"How many books have you sold in the past 5 years?"
It was a pointed yet strictly rhetorical remark. The great Samuel Pepys fiasco had been remaindered less than 6 months after publication.
"You don't hate me," said Thursday 1-4 to Thursday 5. "You secretly want to be like me. If you want to hate anyone, hate her."
She directed this comment at me.
"Why would I?" asked Thursday 5, close to tears.
With a creaking of leather, Thursday 1-4 moved closer to her and said in a low voice,
"Because she insisted that your book was full of touchy-feely family values, pet dodo, gardening, a husband, two lovely kids.
Three?
Whatever. They asked me to do book 5, but I took one look at the script and told them to stick it."
She pointed a gloved finger at me.
"Her personal vanity condemned you to the slow death of being unread, unreviewed, undiscussed, and out of print. The real Thursday is as single-minded as I am, even to the ultimate vanity of rewriting herself into the guise of Little Miss Granola Treehugger here, with no other reason than to protect her own fragile vanity, Z-class celebrity status, and inconsequential public opinion. She and I are more alike than she thinks."
She stopped talking with a triumphant smile on her face. The other Thursday looked at me with tears in her eyes, and I was feeling hotly indignant myself, mostly because what she was saying was true. The only reason I'd taken on Thursday 5 at all was that I felt responsible. Not just because she was an insufferable drip, but because she was an unread one as well.
"Oh, no," said Thursday 5, giving out a heavy sob. "Now all my chakras are completely unaligned. Can I have the rest of the day off?"
"Good idea," said Thursday 1-4, with an unpleasant chuckle. "Why not go and meditate? After all, it's better than doing nothing the whole day."
Thursday gave another cry of indignation. I told her she could leave, and she did so with a faint pop.
"Listen," I said, also lowering my voice. "You can do your character assassination crap all day if you want, but that's not important. What is important is that the C of G, in all its misguided wisdom, seems to think you might be good enough for juris fiction. 5 previous tutors don't agree. I don't agree. I think you're a viper. But it's not up to me. It's up to you. For you to join juris fiction, you need to learn how to survive in the hostile and dynamic textual environment. You and I are going to spend the next few days together, whether I like it or not. And since my conduct review of you is the only thing that counts towards your final acceptance at juris fiction, you need to try really hard not to piss me off."
"Ah," she murmured patronizingly.
"She does speeches. Listen, sister, you may be a big cheese at juris fiction today, but if I were you, I'd show a keen sense of diplomacy. I'll have the bellman's job one day, and I'll be looking out
only for my friends. Now, are you going to be a friend or not?
Good Lord, I said in a quiet voice. The Cheshire Cat was right. You really are completely obnoxious.
Is that your final word?
It is.
Then you can piss off back to your box set right now. Give me your badge.
She seemed perturbed for an instant. Her all-consuming arrogance had not even once entertained the notion she might actually be fired. But, true to form, instead of even attempting conciliation, she went into more threats.
The CFG Cadet Selection Subcommittee won't be happy.
Screw them, your badge.
She stared at me with a sense of rising confusion.
You'd fire me?
Just have. Give me your badge, or I'll place you under arrest.
She took the jurisdiction cadet's shield from her pocket and slapped it into my open palm. Without that, or a travel permit, she was technically a page runner and could be erased on sight.
Good day, I said. I won't say it's been a pleasure, because it hasn't.
And I walked away, pulling out my mobile footnoter phone as I did so.
Hello, Bradshaw. I've just fired Thursday 1 through 4. I'm amazed anyone lasted more than 10 minutes with her.
I didn't.
Goodness, already?
Yes, already. Tell Jobsworth we did our best.
This is really awkward. Jobsworth just called. He's overjoyed that you're taking Thursday. And said that if we do a really good job, he would give jurisdictions extra funding, his special attention.
Too bad. I'll take the flak for it. This one's a serious piece of...
Wait, wait! Yelled Thursday, holding her head in a massive display of self-control.
That was my last chance, wasn't it?
Yes.
She massaged her temples.
I can do this. I'm sore. I'm sore. Sore.
You can say it.
I can't.
Try.
She screwed up her face and forced the word out.
I'm sorry. I'll be your apprentice. Jurisfiction has need of people like me, and I am willing to run the gauntlet of your overbearing mediocrity in order to achieve that.
I stared at her for a moment. Vague apology accepted. I moved away, so Thursday 1 through 4 couldn't hear me, and spoke into my mobile footnoter phone again.
Bradshaw, how badly do we need to suck up to Jobsworth right now?
Bundles, old girl. Do this as a favor to old Bradders, eh? Just until the end of the day.
I told Bradshaw to rely on me. He thanked me profusely, wished me well, and rang off. I snapped the phone shut and placed it back in my bag.
Right, I said, tossing Thursday 1 through 4's badge back at her. For your first assignment, you are to get Thursday 5 back here, chakras realigned or not, and apologize to her.
Thursday 1 through 4 stared at me for a moment, then dialed her own cell phone. I turned away and walked down the gravel drive, trying to relax. What a start! I sat on an ornamental lion at the foot of the entrance steps and watched from a distance as Thursday 5 reappeared and, after the briefest of altercations, they shook hands. There was a pause, and then a few raised voices, until finally, incredibly, and with Thursday 1 through 4 as stiff as a poker, she allowed herself to be hugged. I smiled to myself, got up, and walked back to where the pair of them were standing. Thursday 5 looking optimistically positive, and Thursday 1 through 4 brooding stonily.
Have you two sorted yourselves out?
They both nodded.
Good, I said, consulting my watch. We've got a few hours before we attend the Council of Genres Policy Directive meeting, but before that...
We're attending the CFG meeting? Asked Thursday 5 with eyes like saucers.
Yes, but only in the sort of we that means you stand at the back and say nothing.
Wow! What will they be discussing?
Book world policy, such as whether we should be supplying characters to video games to give them added depth. It's particularly relevant, as publishing these days doesn't necessarily restrict books to being just books. It's said that Harry Potter will make a rare appearance. Now we've got to...
Will we really meet Harry Potter? She asked in a soft whisper, her eyes going all dewy at the mention of the young wizard.
Thursday 1-4 looked to heaven and stood arms crossed, waiting for us to get on with the day's work.
It depends, I sighed, if you pay attention or not.
Now, for this afternoon's assignment, relieving the staff who are dealing with the book world's ongoing piano problem. And for that, we need to go to Text Grand Central.